Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Pull Up Podcast, brought to you by HoopsCritic.com.
All right. We're back. It's Monday night. We got some extended time tonight. I think we're going to go 45 minutes. I'm joined, as always, with Snotty Drippin. We are the Shaq and Kobe of Monday Night Podcast. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes I want to go to a different team. But we are here nonetheless. Snotty, how you doing?
What's up, man? I'm going to be Shaq on that one because I'm the dominant force. You're pretty good, but you're kind of overrated historically. So you're the Kobe of that one. You know, hey man, we gotta work. We're gonna talk to Jacob about getting new music in. I mean, music's all right, but we got a nice little podcast cracking. We're gonna get something probably a little more. I don't know, a little more upbeat vibe. I'm gonna take suggestions to that on Twitter.
I'm with you. I think we're maybe the 0102 Lakers because I think we're gelling on that. I think we need something more masculine. Every time I hear that little intro, I think of a beach volleyball just kind of bouncing around, but there are no women wearing beach volleyball attire, so it's, I don't know if it fits our podcast. I have never worn women's beach volleyball attire. I can't speak for you.
Yeah, I'm not wearing banana hammock, and I think about Enya when I hear that. Enya with, like, I don't know, a remixed Enya song, so we got to step that up a little bit.
I think we need to step it up a little bit every week, but story of our friendship. Let's talk about Game 5.
You step it up. Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
Let's talk Game 5. I mean, it's sad for Cleveland. It's kind of gone how people expected it to go after Cleveland went up 2-1. The Warriors fought back, dug in their heels a bit. Steve Kerr made a nice adjustment in Game 4, throwing Iguodala in the starting lineup. What's your just general thoughts on Game 5 and the Warriors headed back to Cleveland up 3-2?
I think we all kind of saw it at the end of Game 3, and questions were being asked. Did the Warriors figure something out at the end of Game 3, you know, when they came storming back and they almost came back? Game 4, the brilliant move, they put Iggy in the starting lineup, and it made all the world a difference. And then Game 5, I'm going to say that Coach Blatt kind of tripped up on his own feet. And Matt Moore, you guys would know him as HP Basketball, isn't that right?
That is right.
He made very salient points, and he was pretty worked up about it because here's the thing. Mozgov was almost unstoppable offensively, and yes, Golden State was a better team here. Mozgov, they said they played him off the court, but they were better with Mozgov trying to play big than they were trying to match Golden State and go small. You know what I mean? It didn't make a lot of sense basketball wise. So I called Golden State in 6. So even though Cleveland brought a little drama to it and LeBron played out of his mind and made it very interesting and made a compelling series in the middle, I think we saw Golden State's depth and Golden State's athleticism take over because LeBron said himself he was gassed at the end of these games.
Who's been the biggest disappointment on Cleveland for you? I mean, obviously we knew that a lot of people were going to step up for Cleveland to get into this. I mean, LeBron's done his job. We can argue about how great it was and, you know, the shooting, et cetera. But aside from LeBron, who on Cleveland did you think didn't step up in the way they needed him to make this competitive the last couple games?
Honestly, if I had to pick somebody, and it sucks for him because I think he did the best he could with the tools he had, I think Coach Blatt. I didn't speak much out of J.R. Smith. I saw the people talking, and I saw his Atlanta series. But if you look at J.R. Smith's last 4 playoffs, this is who he is. He's not a big-time player. He's not going to step up when the lights get bright. He's just not. Last 4 years, besides this season, he was a 12-point per game, I think 35% from the floor, 33% three-point shooter in the playoffs. I mean, this is who he is. So he didn't disappoint me. You know what? I'll go with this. Shumpert has been that player who people keep saying potential, and if he just needs, he just needs. I guess they say, now I hear he's hurt, it's a groin thing, but I think this we've seen maybe he breaks out next year somehow, but we've been waiting for, what, 3-4 years now with Shumpert. How about you? Who do you think? Who's the guy you thought would step up for
I was gonna say Tristan Thompson, but I like the answer, Blatt. I just don't think he's done anything to really justify calling him the better coach in the series. I don't think he's countered what Kerr was doing. I think he's kind of gone with the flow. Whether the Cavs were up, he wrote it out, or whether the Cavs were down, he wrote it out. And when you're the underdog and you're playing on the road in Game 5 in a must-win game, you can't just go with the flow. I only say Tristan, and he brings great energy, and I think he's done a lot of things. He's not a superstar, so I don't know how much to expect of him. It just felt like he's missed a lot of real easy looks at the basket, and you see there was one play specifically where LeBron draws the double, he's open under the basket, he whips it to him, and, he fumbles with it at the rim, and it just kills you if you're a Cleveland fan because you just want to see them hit those easy looks. But Cleveland hasn't done anything the easy way in the finals, and it shows with their team shooting percentages. Aside from Mozgov, the team has shot subpar all around. If you're the Warriors, who's meant more to your success so far, Curry or Iguodala?
This is one of those tricky questions. This reminds me of the question people were asking for Miami when they were saying, yeah, LeBron's their best player, but Bosch is the most important player. He's the key to everything. To me, that's almost what I call on Twitter fake smart, because your best player is going to be your most important player. I don't care what you say. I mean, that just makes sense to me. So I'm going to say Curry. I understand Iggy's been huge. He's done, bang-up work with LeBron one-on-one. He's been done bang-up work pushing the pace by himself. He's hitting, he's scoring timely buckets. He's been amazing. But, we're talking, but Curry still, he's at 26-5-5 for the series, 45% from the field, 40% from three. And that's with absolutely, poop on a platter game two. So I'm still going to say Curry. I respect Eve what he's done, and I'm glad he's going to shine on the big stage. How about you? Who do you think, let's say besides those two, who is the unsung hero for Golden State? Besides Curry
I think it's Draymond Green. And if I'm not going to take Curry or Iguodala, it's because he's kind of forced Cleveland into this tough position where they either run with Thompson, Mozgov, and hope that they're big enough inside to put it down, or they pull Mozgov, which they did in Game 5, and bring in another small to try and chase everybody around the perimeter. Draymond Green gives you a lot of options. He hasn't been a great player, but he was, plus 23 in Game 5. He's had his moments. I think it was his mom and sister who told him after Game 3 to stop whining to the officials, and since then he's kind of bucked up and got back to the Draymond we knew. Another play in the finals, Game 5, a Matthew Dellavedova play that had a lot of people upset, tripped up Draymond Green, kind of took him down at the legs. Dirty or just typical Dellavedova?
Well, guess what? I'm going to say they're one and the same. I'm not one of the people. I'm not a Dellavedova apologist. I'm not a fan of his game. I didn't see the whole hype about him earlier. I know that not just Twitter, but the average fan in general likes to take people and run with them. So, those up until Game 3, it was he's the Curry lockdown, and he got way more attention, I think, than he deserved. He's a dirty player, I'm going to say it. There's no way you're involved with this many different incidences where it looks – he's like Eddie Haskell. I'm going old school. I know you guys might not know who that is. There was a show called Leave It to Beaver, and Eddie Haskell was the Beave and his brother Wally's friend, and he's all nice to the mom, smiling, hey, Mrs. Cleaver, but he was really kind of a jerk, and that's what Dellavedova reminds me of. He does these little things where he thinks people can't see him, but with the modern technology and everybody has a camera, we catch it all. So, yeah, I'm not a fan of his at all. What do you think?
I'm not sure where I sit on it. I think that play was dirty. I don't think that every play that he's made this year specifically where somebody's gone down has been. I didn't really feel bad for Draymond Green. I think Draymond's a dirty player as well. I see him moving those knees, those elbows, taking that extra step on that screen plenty of times. Not to say that it's fair that he goes out and gets hurt by another guy, but just that there's a little bit of that going both ways, guys on both teams. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, man, I dig it because Draymond's a little feisty too, but I think his is more just intensity and feisty. Yeah, Dele seems like he doesn't mind going for knees. He doesn't. That's where the line is drawn. He kind of went for Draymond's knees, and I think Draymond kind of saw it coming, so he kind of bucked out, you know, and didn't get really hit by it. But yeah, I'm not a fan of Dele in his game. I'm pretty anti Dele now. Dele's close. I love watching Steph Curry just chef him up and just light him up. After all that talk, I think Curry gave him 25 when directly guarded by Dele last game. So all you Cleveland fans out there, I feel sorry for you, but no, he's not the hero.
The only thing I have to say about Dellavedova is when you're a limited player like he is, I mean, period, he's a backup. I'm not even sure he's one of the better backup point guards in the league. He hustles. He plays dirty basketball. He can't hit a shot offensively. I mean, I don't even know how many open shots he's clanked over the course of the playoffs. How else do you contribute to your team if you're not going out there? And I mean, whether it's dirty or not, just busting your butt on every play because that's all you can do. You're not going to break down a defense. You're not going to hit open shots. You're not going to run the floor in transition. I mean, what else can this guy, literally, what are his options? What can he give you if he's not doing that?
Yeah, man, but at the same time, the NBA is like a brotherhood. And beyond just playing hard and, you know, giving each other solid, hard playoff fouls, you look out for each other's livelihood. And I'm not saying he's trying to hurt somebody, but at the same time, I don't think he really cares if he does. And that's where he gets me. And he plays this whole innocent role. Oh, I'm sick of being talked. No, you're doing these little things, man. So, hey, so something to think about, we're going to touch on later on, too. Think about how much you think he makes as a free agent this year.
Okay, I'll keep it in mind.
We'll get that later.
Let's head to Game 6. Just before I ask anything about Game 6, I got one of our questions that came in today. There are quite a few questions today from at Megaton Hookjaw says, on a scale of 1 to sad, how sad will Cleveland be tomorrow? And I think that's a good way to open up Game 6. If Cleveland loses tomorrow, which they are expected to fall, how Cleveland is this series to go up 2-1 after the injuries, build up that Cleveland hope, and then lose the next three?
Why don't you do me a favor? Why don't you go first in this one? Because I think we might have differing views on it. Go ahead.
Honestly, I'm not a Cleveland fan. I don't know the pain. We had Scott Robb on the show a while back. I'm sure he could do a better job of enlightening us. I feel kind of optimistic as like a Cleveland apologist, which I've kind of become. And I look at this team and I think about, you know, how well they played, how close they've been in some of these games, how well LeBron's played. And I think about, you know, Kevin Love has got this taste. He's going to come back. Kyrie Irving's going to come back healthy. I think the future is still bright for Cleveland. I think they did a great run considering the injuries they've had. I'm not super down on it, but again, I haven't gone through 50 years of watching my teams, you know, struggle at the finish line, struggle at the start line, struggle halfway through the race. I can't quite delve that deep into it. What do you think?
I think that the Cavs fans should be proud. I think Cleveland should be proud. There's nothing to be sad about now. Kevin Love went down, I don't know, almost, 2 months ago now? Kyrie went down a couple weeks ago now, it seems like, a week and a half, whatever it is. So I think the shock of that wore off. And I think even Cleveland fans, I saw them on Twitter and you saw the articles, they didn't give themselves a chance in this series, and rightfully so. Man, Golden State's best team in the league. You guys missing your 2 and 3, you know, players. I mean, that's when I say you guys, I'm talking Cleveland. So it fits. I mean, people use a narrative of, you know, oh, New York Town, same old Cleveland. This is what they used to. That's fine, but overall, the season was a roaring success. To go from 19-20 to, you know, finishing where they finished, second in the East. And, you know, even though they had injuries, they blew it through Chicago, they blew it through Atlanta, and they put on a really good – they didn't just, you know, be in the finals against Dom. They put on a good show. They fought tooth and nail. They showed a lot of heart, a lot of determination. LeBron James gave us, you know, out of 4 out of 5 games, he's giving us historic performances. So I don't think Cleveland should be down. I think they know it. I think they know next year they're going to be healthy and better. So I think there's probably no one likes to lose, but I feel Cleveland's going to be pretty optimistic for next year.
The tone on this call right now, it's low. I mean, we all expect Cleveland to lose tomorrow. I would be thrilled if they won and forced Game 7. I think everyone would love to see Game 7 outside of the Bay Area. That's not because we're down on the series. I mean, the first three games of the series were great, and they shouldn't have been. I mean, they were great games, just like you said. LeBron did some historic stuff. I'm looking at this Cleveland roster. I'm looking at their finals numbers. Timofey Mozgov is second in points, since we don't really count Kyrie. 13.4 points per game. Jarris Smith is third with 10 points per game. This team is sad. What would this team's win-loss record, what do you think, 82 game season without LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love? Like, how many teams would this Cleveland, or how many games would this Cleveland team have won in the regular season without their big three?
All right, this is fun. So you're saying without any all three of them. So who? Give me somebody. Who are replacing LeBron? Who are replacing LeBron with?
Okay, let's say they LeBron James doesn't come in the trade, or I guess that he walks to Cleveland. So they spend all that money. They got Trevor Ariza. They signed him to a near max deal out of desperation, and and they traded, and let's say they still have Andrew Wiggins. They didn't make the trade for Kevin Love because they didn't have LeBron. Wiggins.
Give me. Let's do one for replacement for them. So let's say they didn't get LeBron, and so they got Trevor Ariza. I mean, we can do it just like that. So let's say Love, they signed Love. He got hurt the first week of the season.
Okay.
Right. And let's say Kyrie got mono and he missed the whole year. So So now you got Trevor Ariza.
This is your lineup. You got Matthew Dellavedova, J.R. Smith, Trevor Ariza, Tristan Thompson, Timofey Mozgov, playing 82 games through the season. That team wins X amount of games.
Is it possible for me to say they win negative games? Because yeah,
are they working
ugly,
the Knicks?
Man. You know what? I'm going to say this. If somehow Black got them to buy into playing defense, kind of the way they are now, and let's say J.R. Smith got comfortable in this role, and all right, give me a backup point guard because they still got to sign. Let's say they got to get somebody to back up Dellavedova.
I don't even know who do they even have.
You know what? Let's say they swing. No, how about this? They swing a trade for D.J. Augustin early. Don't ask me how.
I kind of like that move, for the hypothetical Cavaliers rebuilding.
I would let him start, of course, and they'll be back up. So that's that. So now you got D.J. Augustin, you got J.R. Smith, Trevor Ariza, Tristan Thompson, and Mozgov. And so Mozgov cut loose from early. I think, all right, so now they're not winning the playoffs. They're going to be better than they'll be better than the Knicks this year. The Knicks were an abomination this year.
They were pretty awful.
Who else? In
this situation, though, we are talking about a J.R. Smith that is playing 35 minutes a night, that is shooting the ball probably 20 times a night. Can you imagine if LeBron, the camera injury happens, game four, LeBron's head's bleeding, he actually misses the game, and everybody looks down the bench like, who do we have left that can create their own shot? Oh, wow, only J.R. Smith. We're going to watch J.R. Smith take a double team on, head-to-head, try to dribble through his legs once, and throw a contested three-pointer up there 20 times in a game. What kind of basketball will we be watching? I just think the whole reason we're doing these hypotheticals is this Cleveland team is bad, and I know they've got great efforts. Game three, Dellavedova has a great night. Everybody wants to flag pull him. No. I mean, Tristan Thompson had great moments. No. This team is bad. They averaged less points as a team than the 0-1 Sixers did. I don't remember a team this bad in the finals. LeBron straight has willed them to game six. Do you agree?
Well, yeah. I totally agree, man. And I said it before. I think it that those two wins by themselves. I said win or lose this series. The fact that he won, that LeBron willed them to two wins against the Golden State Warriors, made this one of the most impressive finals I've ever seen. And that team we were just talking about, without taking those three off of there, I mean, we're talking what, 12 wins, 15 wins? What's the over under on that? What do you think?
I'm gonna say like 15 wins. I mean, I think they would be slightly better than Knicks, but I don't think they'd be much better.
I agree,
I
man.
Really don't.
I will say that watching J.R. Smith, like let's say something happened with LeBron and he got to do two or three whole games in the finals the way he wanted to play it, I would tune in for every second because I love watching J.R. Smith because I think he's gonna fail more than succeed, but he's always interesting to watch.
Well, I thought that too. I thought he was due for a good game. He comes out, he has, I think, what, 10 or 11 points the first quarter last night, and then he hits one shot the rest of the game. Just the kind of player he is. He's just so unbelievably streaky, has no idea how to play within an offense, has done the same thing he's probably done in the high school playground since he was, you know, 15. But when he's not hard.
I'm going to ask you this about J.R. Smith, all right? And let's just take a second, take a deep breath. Everybody who's listening, clear your mind. J.R. Smith, he has some nice games against Atlanta. Are we sure that he is that much better than Deion Waiters? Would Deion Waiters be better or worse in this series right now?
I'll say what I said when Cleveland made that trade, and it's that if I have to choose between those two players to come in and give me 30 minutes and be an active participant in the offense, I'd rather have the younger kid because there's still hope that he might give his head a shake, buy in, and learn some stuff. And I think it's the same thing. Jarrett Smith had that one great game. Jarrett Smith is shooting 31% in the finals. Matthew Dellavedova is shooting 30%. We were talking about an undrafted kid who can contribute absolutely nothing on offense, is shooting about the same percentage as the second guy who's getting the looks on Cleveland. I mean, give me Waiters just based on age, although I think Jarrett Smith is a little bit better of a player.
I'm with you, man. I mean, that's it. I get it. LeBron wanted to win now. Deion wasn't totally buying in. He wasn't – who said something about this? I think I was listening to one. Oh, one of the, I'm not going to name the name, but he said, you know, the guys who Dellavedova and JR bought into the whole father LeBron thing where it's, yes, well, father's the end of the earth. Deion didn't really buy into that, so he got booted. But, I mean, for what they he would feel the role better than JR. He's a better rebounder. I think we saw in OKC he can actually man up, play some defense. And he's stronger to the hole. So, yeah, I get it. He's not who we thought he was last year, but he still has a ways to go to grow. And while JR is JR, so that's just me.
There's lots of news today. I mean, we're gonna talk after Game 6. We are going to hash this out. We've got the benefit of a longer show. Maybe we'll do an hour after the finals, Game 6. Let's move on to some news. Let's talk some draft. Let's talk some trades. One of our other questions today, I don't know where he pulled this clip from this article. All day, every day, one, all day with only one L, asked us, do you think this trade should go down? I'll read this trade to you. Okie, it's the Thunder and the Raptors. Thunder get first-round pick, 20th overall, and Terrence Ross. The Raptors receive a first-round pick, 14th overall, and Deion Waiters. Does that make sense to you? Do you like that trade?
So we're
talking
Raptors,
about Waiters anyway.
Raptors give up who and James Jones? Pick is that?
They give Terrence Ross up in the 20th pick to move up 6 in the draft, and then they get the 14th overall pick in Deion Waiters.
Huh. I don't like – that's tough. I don't like that pick for either team, really. That's almost a lateral move. So, OKC's giving up the 14th. What pick is the Toronto again? I know you just told me. I'm being an idiot right now.
20.
The 20th and Terrence Ross
overall.
for the 14th and Deion Waiters. No.
Yeah.
No, not at all. Because, again, I said this before. Terrence Ross, I like him in theory. 3-and-D, athletic, but he's really not that good a shooter. I don't think that's much of an upgrade from Deion, even though he's a better fit for what OKC wants to do next year. But I want to see Donovan have a year of Deion. And then, yeah, the 14th pick is more valuable. I almost think that it should go the other way. But yeah, I think OKC should get a better pick if they were trading and get a better player than Terrence Ross for their 14th. That's just me.
Everybody listening right now, I think we now know the number one we've now met the number one Deion Waiters fan in the entire world. Because Snotty just said that the Raptors should give a better pick with Terrence Ross or Deion Waiters. That's hope, man. You have legit hope that Deion Waiters can still play ball.
Oh, see, now you're throwing some shade because I understand. I don't think Deion Waiters is going to make the league in another year or two. I don't. Unless he gets a serious attitude adjustment, he's not. The talent's there, but there's no way possible you're going to keep shooting step-back 18-footers on any team that's trying to win anything. And, you know, he's going to be – I guess he's up for an extension here soon, right? So, I'm not a big fan of his. I was. I don't know if I told you about the tweet I sent last year when he was averaging 19, like 5-5 while Kyrie was out. Did I tell you about that?
No, I didn't. I never heard the story.
All right, we'll come back to that in a second. But
we'll
I'm not a huge fan of his. I think Terrence Ross is actually has potential to be so much better. But right now, I believe it. The idea of Terrence Ross, what he's supposed to do, is way better than what Terrence Ross actually does. That's only what I'm saying.
Fair enough. I don't like it for either side. It hurts my heart to consider Dion Waiters, DeMar DeRozan, and Lou Williams on the floor together. I would, as a Canadian, I don't think I can let that happen. And for the Thunder, I think the Thunder are in a position where the Spurs were a few years back when they drafted Kawhi Leonard. I think the Thunder should be looking for their Kawhi Leonard at 14. They should be looking for the guy that can step up and be impactful right now and help them get over the cusp. But so, yeah, I don't really like that trade for either side. I got another question here. We're talking about news. Lance Stephenson. There's rumors Lance Stephenson might be going to Los Angeles, the Los Angeles Clippers. At Anthony Irwin NBA, our good friend. Maybe not your good friend. I don't know how you two have a little bit of a Twitter fight there, but who's this trade good for? Do we like this? Do we not like this? Is Doc Rivers, I think someone else asked us, is Doc Rivers going to get more out of Lance than previous coaches?
Yeah, first of all, Anthony Irwin NBA, is that right?
Yeah.
He's a horrible, horrible person. And because of him, I'm hoping that the Lakers, they pull a fast one and draft somebody like, maybe they even go back and somehow draft Hasheem Thabeet. That's what they deserve. Now, he's a good guy. He had me on his podcast a couple times. So, the trade for Lance Stephenson, the first, I think my visceral reaction was, oh, hell no. Lance was horrible this year. He was absolutely deplorable. So I thought it was like trading a bucket of cat puke for, a bag full of, dog pickup after you followed him around all day. But when you think about this, Stephenson was fine in Indiana. He actually was a near borderline all-star when he was asked to be the second banana and play a very limited role. You create when Paul George isn't in, you play off with Paul George, and you back up. You got big guys defending behind you. They brought him into Charlotte and said, hey, we need you to be our second banana. I want you to run, pretty much help initiate the offense. They gave him too much responsibility, basically, and he's not that kind of player, as we saw. So I think playing behind Blake Griffin and playing behind Chris Paul would help him a lot because now he has a definite hierarchy. He has two real alpha guys in front of him. He has a very limited role. He knows that, this my job is to rebound. I'll be the secondary playmaker. I can run the second unit a little bit. Lock him in the gym, have him work on them corner threes. I think this could help him. He's still young. He's still very talented, we saw. He just had an awful, awful year. So I'm going to be cautiously optimistic for the Clippers on this. They need wing help, and they got wing help. What do you think? Am I way off?
I don't know. I didn't. Which Lance Stephenson do you believe in? Do you believe in 2013-14 Lance Stephenson that almost got himself a max contract, that played really well in the regular season, that was a secondary ball handler, that was getting you triple-doubles, competing in multiple facets of the game? Or do you believe in 2014-15 Lance Stephenson that made some money, didn't fit in the new system, failed under the pressure? I mean, Lance Stephenson last year probably wasn't even better than Matt Barnes. I mean, Matt Barnes probably gave you more, and he's a teammate that everybody loves, that everyone will go on record and say, hey, we love this guy as a teammate. When was the last time you heard somebody say, wow, I love playing with Lance Stephenson? I don't know. I think you're older, guys. He's younger.
That's my thing. He's really young. You're absolutely right. Last year, even Matt Murdock would have been better than Lance Stephenson. Even Rick Barnes, the coach, was better than Lance Stephenson last year. He was horrible. I think I saw a number. He played – no other two-guard ever played as many minutes as he did and shot as low as he did from the floor, 37% from the floor and, 18% from three or some nonsense. He was – we could have went out on the court and did about as well as he did last year. I'm just thinking, young player talent, he's going to get another shot, and I guess it's not a big deal because they got rid of Hawes. Matt Barnes got torched by everybody last year for the Clippers. I remember I saw a game, and they were like, oh, Clippers lost. I said, let me guess. Whoever the small forward or two guard is had a career night. I didn't look at anything yet, and Twitter just blew up. Like, yep, career night for the small forward. So they needed help on the wings, upgrade. Spencer Hawes was a train wreck. They got rid of that contract. And I think they have a team option next year for Lance. So it's a low risk, high reward thing, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, you pull the trigger, you hope for the best. I don't think it kills you. I don't think it's a great move. We'll see. Let's move on to some other news. Some other news today. Joel Embiid, one step forward, 2 years back. How do we feel about Joel Embiid? Hold on, I got a comment here from one of our listeners. At Matt is Neat says, how screwed are the Sixers if Joel is down another year? Or is it secretly a blessing? Personally, I'm going to go quick here. I think I'm done with the Sixers tanking experiment. I don't like it. I don't like all these stashing players. Now you got a guy that's hurt, missing second year. When are they going to start winning in Philly? What do you think?
I'm on the opposite side of this, man. Look, I'm all in on what Hinkie's doing, because if you're going to tear it down, raise it to the ground, salt the earth, and then retill it and start over, I'm all for it. I think people are getting a little impatient because this is only the end of year two of the rebuild. This is the long – they're doing the long plan. After year two, I mean, I'm not upset they did it for another year, right? I don't know if they're doing it on purpose. Well, if they are, I don't know. So it does bother me about Embiid. Man, what's my man's name? I was on Twitter yesterday, and someone – was it Patrick Fenelon? Someone tweeted, and he just said over and over again, don't draft big men with – injured big men within a lottery. Don't draft injured big men in the lottery. And, I mean, it sucks. I really hope that he can bounce back from it. What is it, the navicular bone in his foot? It's the same problem Yao had, and I think it's the same problem Big Z had that really limited him. He came back. He was productive afterwards, but never the same. So the part that bothers me most, that let's say that Embiid isn't good to go and he's hindered for the rest of his career, people are going to point at this and say, well, see, Hinkie's way doesn't work. But you can't plan for injuries, man. It's the same way like when OKC, now they're saying, oh, see, Presti made the wrong choice when he kept he traded Harden. Well, no, he didn't. Injuries hit the next, you know, 2-3 years. 3 years in a row, injuries have hit him. So you can't plan for that.
You can't plan for injuries, but Presti made the wrong move with Harden. I mean, clearly the Thunder should not have traded James Harden.
It's hindsight 2020, man. Hindsight 2020. If your owner says you can only spend this much, you can't give Harden the max. You just can't do it.
You could have got rid of Perkins. You could have got rid of Serge Ibaka. I mean, yes, we have hindsight. That Serge Ibaka is important to that team.
Look what happened last year without Serge in the playoffs. Serge is your backbone of your defense. He is the most unique player in the NBA. I will say to this day that even if they got rid of anybody, if they got rid of Serge and kept Harden, that's a worse move. Yeah, no, you keep Serge Ibaka. And that's just me with Serge. I'm not saying he's a better player than Harden, but for what you need on that team, there's a tipping point. You got three high-usage players. It's not going to be 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 3. Sooner or later, it's going to be 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 2.5. And you're not going to get your max team efficiency having those three guys on the team. So we're going down a rabbit hole with that one. But my point is you can't plan for injuries and then 2 years later say, oh, I made a mistake, because the injuries aren't why you made the mistake. The mistake is that's going to be another reason. So they went for Embiid. Let's hope he can come back healthy. Knock on wood for the young man. I heard he was killing before he got hurt. But, yeah, that's troubling, man. Foot problems for a guy who's 280. And from what I understand, that kind of break is caused from overuse and stress. So what's going to happen the rest of his career? That's what's troubling.
I've forgotten about Embiid entirely as soon as you said Presti. Can't blame Presti. I mean, we're going to come back to this. We're going to save this for after the finals, nice long hour show, and we're going to talk some what-ifs, some whodunits. We'll come back. But, yeah, we'll come back to this one because we definitely don't agree. I got another – we're talking about the draft. We're talking about Embiid. Oh, you got one? Okay, you go first.
Oh, damn, what I do with it? So I had a good trade idea here, and let's see what you think about it. Where to go. This is what you call scintillating listen right here. You listen to me scroll through my – all right, so this is my man at Jim_Thomas_. he was thinking, he was talking about Denver, the Denver trading Winston Chandler. I said, I think they should trade him. And he said, the number 14 and Lamb and maybe PJ3, Perry Jones the third, or some other pieces for Winston Chandler straight up. So let's say the number 14 and Lamb and or PJ for Winston Chandler. Now, what do you think about this move? I have some pretty pointed thoughts on this.
If you're Denver, I love it. You grab another lottery pick. I mean, at the end of the lottery, granted, but you grab another lottery pick and you stock your shelves a bit. I mean, two guys that haven't really had a run, you can give them a shot in your program. If you're OKC, I don't know. I think if you're OKC, I really like the Kawhi Leonard thing that I said earlier. You are looking for the best possible player for the next 5 years for your franchise. And that's, you know, the Spurs didn't know how long they had left with Duncan and Manu and Parker. And, you know, the situation's different in Oklahoma. We don't know how long Durant and Westbrook are going to be there. So I don't really like the idea going all in on a guy who I don't know how many minutes he's going to get to play and how he's going to fit in their rotation over, you know, a young guy who might give you just as much in 20 minutes. I don't know. I don't really like it from OKC side.
Here's the reason I like it for OKC. Right now, OKC is fully stocked on their roster. I think they got 15 people, and that's like without the draft pick. I might be a little off. I'm spitballing here, right? So, two things: rookies don't usually come in and give you a lot of production right away. Am I correct? Rookies usually aren't. Right. So they're picking 14th. They're not picking the cream of the crop. They had to get good talent there. I've seen. They said there's a guy named Cameron Payne, which I don't like that talk at all. I've heard R.J. Hunter for them, Sam Decker, all that's well and good. They want to win now. Kevin Durant is up for free agency next season, Russ the season after. They don't have a lot of time. That's why Lamb didn't get minutes. That's why PJ3 didn't get steady minutes. They don't have time to groom some guy and let him make mistakes and fumble around and say, oh, that's good. They don't have time for that. Winston Chandler is, what, like 6'8"? He can play if you needed to play him at the big two, fine. He played the three and the four. Last year, I mean, his per 36 numbers are excellent. He produced every year. He's not a great shooter, but he can hit the three. He can defend probably 2 through 3. Last year, in limited minutes, less than 32 minutes a game, he was at about 14 points, 6 rebounds, a couple assists. He's not a great defender, but, I mean, the guy can play ball. You want somebody to come in. Imagine a lineup with Russell Westbrook, let's say, even if you want to start Morrow, and you got KD at 3. No, screw that. Start Chandler up high at 2 and have KD at 3, Serge and Enes Kanter. He's another vet who can play, and they need that. So I don't think any rookie they get this year, it's impossible to say, let's get a Kawhi Leonard, because even the Spurs didn't know they were getting Kawhi Leonard. Pop himself said it. We didn't think he'd be this. So picking at 14, yeah, you can get talent there. But I think they're ready to go deep in the playoffs now. Not think, we know that. The last 2 years have been disappointments for them. So I would love to see a move to get somebody like Winston Chandler in there. I don't know. I think maybe you're right. You know, the 14th might be too much. But it's time to strike now for them. They got to show KD that they're serious.
I think your mentality is right. I like what you're saying. Take your shot because you don't know how long you're keeping your superstars if you don't. I get that. But I also think Andre Roberson, who they brought in, played the two guard for them last year, was pretty good defensively, and the team suffered when he was out. I don't want to say he's the next Tony Allen. That's cliche, but I don't know his plus-minus numbers off the top of my head, but I remember his plus-minus on and off the court was pretty impressive. I think that's a guy that can maybe play more minutes than the series, a young kid. I don't love the idea of trading lottery talent for a guy you're not sure how he's going to fit in your rotation, how many minutes he's giving you. But I do understand the viewpoint that, look, we got Durant, we got Westbrook, neither's really happy how the last few years have gone. We got to do whatever it takes to win for these guys. I get that. And if that's the reasoning and that works out, then so be it.
Well, another problem, I think Memphis just showed us that the days of having a specialist who can't score are over. The fact that Memphis the fact that Golden State played Memphis, played Tony Allen off the floor, just by saying, hey, don't even guard him. You can't have a player like Anthony Roberson as a starter anymore. I think that those days are kind of gone, and I hope Billy Donovan comes in and makes a couple changes. You just can't have there's limited resources in basketball. So just having guys out there to do one specific thing. Look at Golden State doing right now. It's all about versatility. So I like Roberson. I like what he represented, but I don't know. He has the D part. He doesn't have the three part. And so he's almost going to play himself off the court next year.
We should have done an hour show. We definitely got more than 5 minutes left in us. Yusuf M underscore 24. Who should the Lakers pick? This is interesting because I think a lot of boards have changed over the last week. A whole lot of reports that a whole lot of guys are being considered at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Who do the Lakers take? I mean, it was Towns and Okafor, you know, a month ago. That was it. It was Towns and Okafor were going 1, 2. And now you hear, you know, we're looking at Russell. We're looking at Porzingis. We're looking at, you know, Willie Cauley-Stein, whoever it is. What do the Lakers do?
I'm going to try to go rapid fire a little bit. I'm going to say Lakers should just go whoever's left out of Okafor Towns. I know it all sounds good, and it's easy to get lost in the, like a kid in a candy store, but they've been doing their work all year. Don't let great workouts and, you know, the rising stock of somebody, you know, playing an empty gym knock you off your pivot. These are two big men who can be franchise changers. So whoever's left, Okafor Towns, unless they really love Russell. But don't go for one of those Porzingis or, you know, Moody picks at number two. Who do you think that you get?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think you take Okafor or Russell. Okafor or Towns. I'm not a big Russell guy. He scares me. And I don't know. I haven't seen Porzingis work out, but I've seen an awful lot of European big men bust. And there was a reason he was slotted at 7 or 10 or wherever he was all year. I think the candy store analogy is good. I'll go with the one of the two big men that we watched in the tourney this year. Another
That's
one.
That's it. I got a question. Let me chew one off for you. You ready?
Okay.
All right, Mr. Keith, at Keith Kill, young Hank Moody. He just wants to know, best option for Knicks at the draft. So let's say Towns, Okafor, and Russell are gone, 1, 2, 3. Who do you got from New York at 4, best option?
That's tough. At NickFan underscore for life asked the exact same question. I think, you know, I really like Moutier. I do, but I don't know if he's the right point guard for the triangle. I don't know if he's a great shooter. I haven't seen a ton of that. That's somewhere where maybe I think you can take Porzingis. That's where you want to, if you're the
Ooh.
Knicks, and you really
Knicks
believe
fan.
He's the next Dirk, as all these
Knicks.
Executives are talking about, I would take a reach on him if you really believe he's that kind of player, once-in-generational player. Take a risk. Your team's going to suck next year anyway. You can go the Philly route if he needs to play a year. Do what you got to do. Take the best guy you see on the board who you think is going to fit in your system over the next five.
Knicks fans, you hear it here. Hey, Knicks fans, Josh Eberle wants you to pick Andre Bargnani Part 2. He just said it himself.
Ooh. I hope he's not. I don't want to throw that on the kid. I don't know the kid. I don't want to wish that ill of him. I don't want him to be Darko Milicic. I don't want him to be Andre Bargnani. I don't want him to be Alexei Petrov or whoever else there was. I really hope he lives up to the expectations that have been set for him.
All right, man, shoot. What you got? Next question. Let's do it.
Okay. John at Lord Snow 17. Sorry about John Snow, Lord Snow. Tyus Jones to the Mavericks. Makes sense.
That's a great question. It's funny. I'm looking at the same one. I think, yes, they need a point guard. I like some of the other bigger point guards better, but I think he's probably the best shooter between, like, him and what's the kid's name, DeLon Wright, Jerry Grant. This kid's the better shooter and probably the better passer. So, yes, definitely. They need youth and they need a point guard. What do you think?
You know, I've been a Mavs fan for quite a few years now. My guess is that pick doesn't end up even being Dallas's pick. They don't like to draft anybody. But I think you have to wait and see who's there. I don't know that I love Tyus Jones. I don't think he's a great NBA player, but they do want a point guard. I think I'd rather go with Payne if he's there, Cameron Payne. But, you know, it is what it is. It's 19 in the draft. We'll have to wait and see.
All right, one more. You need more. We have time for one more, you think?
Yeah, go. Fire.
I hit Tyus Jones real quick. I already said it, yes. And Frightened Inmate had the same question. So the last one, Pete Chilcutt, at Pete underscore Chilcutt. Where would you rank a Golden State choke job if they lose this series among all-time sports chokes? Also, what is your number one sports choke of all time?
Oh, no, this is really hard for All-time sports joke. You were the favorite. The team you were playing lost their second-best player. Their third-best player was already out, and you went up 3-2. It's big. It's a pretty big choke job. I don't know where being – come back to me on this. We'll talk about this next show. Keep this favorited. Let me do some research. Biggest sports choke all time. I don't want to just throw something out there. I want to really think about that one and savor it.
I'm going to hit it real quick. When the Nuggets beat the Sonics in, what was that, 96, 97, 98, that was huge. Dallas losing to Golden State in 2007, that was tremendous. And Miami losing to Dallas in 2011. But this would be by far the biggest, I think. Losing the finals to this team, by far the biggest NBA choke job I've seen. I don't care about the other sports, really, because they don't really exist to me. So, there you go.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We are almost out of time. Keep your eyes and ears open. There are a ton of articles being published this week on hoopscritic.com. We'll probably have podcasts up every other day for the rest of the finals, up to the draft. Thank you for listening. Snotty, you want to say anything?
Yo, keep an eye out for our mock drafts of doom coming up. It's going to be pretty bad. Enjoy that one.
All right. Thank you again. Take care.
Thanks, guys.